Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Chilluminati Podcast, episode 268. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined today by the John Bell and Kate Batts of L.A., Jesse and Alex.
Oh, Bell and Batts, my favorite comedy duo.
Bell and Batts. Those names will make sense to you by the end of the episode.
Oh, all right. What? So I took a wild swing and clearly whiffed.
No, yeah, no. Not an actual comedy duo this time.
I tried. I figured.
What? For all those who are not on the Patreon tier video, Alex
played purely to the camera. Yeah, that translates real well to podcast.
You asked for this, viewers.
Yeah, who wants to be Bell and who wants to be Batts?
I'm obviously the Bell of the ball, so I'll take that.
You're the Bell because you ring true. And I'm Batman because my parents were killed in an alley when I was watching Zorro. And I committed my life to solving crimes.
Even though this has absolutely nothing to do with this podcast and never will, while I was out of town, I got in an argument with a person about Batman.
Love that.
And how Batman as a character sucks. Like, I don't believe this, but I was told Batman sucks because Batman's one rule of not killing. And I was like, it isn't.
No, Batman sucks because he's a billionaire.
I was like, it isn't because he just doesn't want to kill people. It's that he knows if he kills people, he'll only ever kill people, which is why he doesn't do it, because he doesn't want to be a villain like the people he's stopping. Like, it's not that complicated. And they were just like, it's so dumb. Like, what a stupid character choice. I'm like,
it's so wild to stare a living myth in the face. Like, one of the only things that humanity has created in the last several hundred years that, like, somehow has, like, impacted culture and mythology, and to be like, it's lame that he doesn't shoot people.
Killing the Joker. That's what the Joker wants. Like, is the Joker winning.
That's exactly what the conversation was about. Was the Joker brutally murdering people again and again and again? And he just killed him. Yeah. And I wanted to be like, Jason Todd literally tells this to Batman, like, just kill the dude already. And Batman's like, I can't, because if I do, I won't stop killing. It is there already.
There's literally a character in Batman called Ghostmaker who literally is the same exact background as Bruce Wayne. Like, a guy who grew up rich and is like, has resources and is fighting crime, except he kills people. And it's obvious what is different about him than Batman and why it, like, you would not be like, what a great guy Batman is if you just cut the head off of every single villain.
I recently just watched Death Note, and I don't, whoever that person is, I don't want them having a Death Note, because that's scary. You know, like, they think Batman should kill, they shouldn't own a Death Note.
Ghostmaker would just kill everyone. He would bankrupt the Bic company.
Yeah, he'd be like Light and just sitting in his room writing names for hours and hours and hours and hours.
Crazy thing about Death Note, Light is not the hero. Spoilers.
No.
He's not a good person.
He's a pure narcissist. That is all he is. His ending.
Apparently, there's a second half of that show, too.
Yeah, there is.
Crazy.
I actually, watching it again, I really enjoyed it more, the second half, more than I did the first time, when the shock, I think, just ruined the
second
half. I
was a hater the first time, for sure. Yeah, I was just being a hater because I liked the best Sherlock Holmes cat and mouse game ever. Yeah,
absolutely agree. But that's not what today is about. Today is about patreon.com/podbynight. / Chilluminati.
Podbynight. A great podcast. That's a
different podcast I do.
They just finished their first season. Not their first series, but they're a huge. They just finished a huge storyline. Go check them out. Support them. It really means a lot to them. Go
support this show. Actually,
patreon.com/podbynight. Ghost Mathis' show.
I believe Jesse Cox was on there. I heard that was good.
He was. Yeah, he was
great
there.
On there. Me and Jesse have a show about Star Wars as well. You should go listen to that. And those are the only Patreons you have to support today. You don't have to go to patreon.com/chilluminatipod today. Not if you don't want. I'll give you guys some.
But
options.
If you did. And let's say you're like a rich prince, like a
man,
like one of the Habsburgs.
We got a website for you. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
There's so much there for you to just splurge on, prince.
Mm-hmm. Does that give us 10,000 and they get nothing in return, Jesse? What are they going to get for that money?
I mean, if you're like part of Bohemian Grove, you get my invite to it.
There you go. Patreon.com/
Wear an owl mask and like court of owls the shit out of that. That'd be amazing.
The other thing before we dive into the episode is I want to remind everybody, hey, if you have December 20th that day, you might want to clear your calendars off for December 20th, maybe in Chicago, where a double feature will be happening. Mm-hmm. Both the Cox and Crendor live, followed by a Chilluminati pod live. will be happening at the Lincoln Theater.
The best Christmas present you can give, holiday present you can give. Although, you know, I feel like this one is like Santa, he'd respect us. He'd be like, those are my jolly boys right there.
Those are my jolly boys.
That's what Santa says.
Oh, yeah. Those are my jolly boys.
Every time, actually, yeah.
It'll be a nice show. It is at Lincoln Hall. If it's real. If it's at Lincoln Hall.
If we did it, it would be at Lincoln Hall.
And it's our home away from home. Every time we're in Chicago, it's beautiful. It's wonderful.
I've never been. My first time to Chicago.
Those tickets sell out. So just... They always have. They always will. So just warning you in advance. That's why we're talking about it now. Make preparations.
Yeah. Keep your eyes on our social media.
I'm going to take Mathis to see jazz.
Yeah.
Take Mathis to see jazz.
I'm gonna see if we can go get a pizza pot pie.
Yeah. There we go. That sounds
delicious.
Chicago is hell.
Yeah. Like sounds, fucking have
that
a
sounds
heart
Chicago core.
Today's episode is not Chicago core, though.
No.
It's October already. Happy Halloween almost. We're spooky month.
Are we going to get finally spooky arrived? This month?
We're getting spooky all month long. And while I told you we were covering a certain topic, I actually realized it was October. And I actually had a topic half prepared that I was ready to dive into for October. We're getting into a very famous haunting that we haven't talked about on this show that
I
took
love
place
a ghost.
In the early 1800s. The haunting of the Bell Witch. Familiar. This will be a two-parter, but I don't think it'll be three. Definitely a two-parter. Are you familiar with the Bell Witch at all?
This is the one where there's like this, these people in a house, and this witch like accosts them and like hears like a voice speaking to them from like a far
Wait,
away.
Am I the witch in this scenario?
Kate Batts
from the intro.
You are. You are more Kate Batts than you realize. Alex, you're not a John Bell.
I was Bell. He was
Oh,
Batts.
You picked Bell? Okay, then you're the farmerman. You're not really a John Bell either.
You're like John Proctor, kind of.
Oh, really. Man.
But yeah, Alex, you got some of it right. Yeah, like that stuff did happen, yes, but like there's like more detail and context.
I made a video about it like literally 15 years ago somewhere.
So oh, you okay. know backstory. I don't, question, is it B-L-E-E or, I'm sorry, B-L, what the B,
is it a B-L-T no, or is it a B-L-T-A?
It's actually just a B-T. I don't like the L in that sandwich.
What just, I just, my brain. Boys,
this is, ladies and gentlemen, this is what middle age looks like. This is what it does
what
to you.
What the hell did I just say?
It's just
what?
B-E-L-L.
It's just B-E-L-L. B-E-L-L. There's no extra E at the end. I knew what you were getting what? At. I promise
B-L-E.
You.
B-L-E.
Oh, where am I?
But
the Blee Witch.
But Bats is B-A-T-T-S. So it's not just, you know, B-A-T-S. A little bit different there.
All right. That's what I just want to know how it's spelled.
That's what he
All
meant.
Right, we're good.
That's what he meant. Yeah.
The Bell Witch has been heavily covered throughout the many, 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 many decades. The two main sources I'm using for this are two books, one by the name of The Bell Witch, An American Haunting. And then there's The Bell Witch in Myth and Memory, from local legend to international folktale. Those are the two sources I'm using. I also watched like part of a documentary, and then I got bored of it because I wasn't learning anything new and I stopped watching it. This is gonna be fun. This is a really fun story that I thought we covered, but we haven't. I'm really glad we haven't. So we're gonna start way back when John Bell himself was born, as our story is very focused around John Bell and everything that happened to him in this haunting. He was born in the ripe age of 1750 in Edgecombe County, North Carolina, which would later become Halifax County. And he came from a modest background at the time, growing up in a rural area during a period of colonial expanse, and his early years were shaped by the agrarian lifestyle that everybody was essentially living at that point. Fields and farms and livestock, they were just kind of settling their lives down.
Sounds kind of nice.
You know, when you realize...
For some people.
Well, yeah, for some. You just got to ignore the people who were here before that.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
And those who were brought later.
In a vacuum,
yeah,
living
yeah.
in an agrarian society sounds
yes,
quite nice.
Yes, it does.
In any non-specific agrarian society, I could get along quite well.
Yeah. By the time he reached adulthood, John was basically just a skilled farmer. This is what he did his whole life. He acquired land and established himself as a relatively successful farmer in his own community. And like many men of his era, Bell's social status was very much tied to his land ownership, and he worked to increase his holdings as years went on. He would eventually marry a woman by the name of Lucy Williams in the late 1780s. She was a prominent and well-respected local family of the Williamses, known for just a good reputation. They were just like well-liked in the community as far as
chill folks.
Yeah, so he was in his 30s at the time?
He would have been, he was born in 1950. So in the 80s, he's in his, 1750. And then you get, she was married to her in the 1780s. So he's in his 20s.
What?
50, 60, 70. Oh, 80. No, you're right. 30s. I did my math wrong.
I'm more curious about her because I feel like this is one of those situations where we're going to find out, like, at the ripe old age of 14, she was like 30-year-old man.
Yeah, she was like 16, I think.
That sounds right for the time period.
Considerably younger than John was. But at the same time, that was the norm. That's how it was just back
then. I would argue that it is still kind of the norm, is that older men marry younger women who, because of social status and things like that, that happens frequently around the world still.
Leonardo DiCaprio is well known for dating models that are like 18. Together, the two of them would go on to have six kids: Jesse, John Jr., Drury, Benjamin, Esther, and their youngest, Betsy Bell.
Mathis.
Time out real quick.
Mathis. Yeah, it was me.
Their youngest. Mathis.
There was a child named Jesse Bell.
Jesse Bell, yeah. John Bell Jr.
Jezebel? Come
Jesse?
On now.
Jezebel
is just as good as Jesse Cox. This is good stuff.
Jesse Bell is like your like weird like alternate universe. Like I also have a like kind of sex related situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I had like a drag sona, I would be Jezebel.
Yeah.
That is easy. That works. That's so awesome.
That's so perfect. We got to get you as Jezebel in a live show one day.
What was the Overwatch that you did? You did one?
Yeah, I've done a lot of a lot of that.
Your May was like, it was like professionally
looked like
good.
The model.
Money was spent on that.
Yeah, I remember seeing you at BlizzCon. Yeah, it was nuts. So Jezebel, one of my favorite name of the kids is Drury. Drury.
Drury like Bell?
Drury Bell.
Drury. Drury.
Yeah, it's
like jewelry, but like Drury.
Drury, yeah.
Do you think that's where Drew in general comes from?
Drury? No, it's Andrew.
I thought it was Andrew is where.
You're probably absolutely correct, but Drury is not a name you hear anymore.
Drury makes me feel like I'm about to like go down to like the Weeping Oaks, or you know what I mean? And like, those like Cajun, like bayou driveways.
Yeah.
It's like 50 feet wide for some fucking reason. Yeah. That's where Drury lives.
His wife, Lucy, was really well known for her charity and gentle nature, by the way. She was known for like aiding her neighbors and when they were in times of trouble, meaning like when they were sick.
We're all pieces of shit. All of us are pieces of shit. She's known for her charity.
Yeah, she'd go help neighbors if they had hurt or like sick kids or somebody got sick. Yeah, I know.
I mean, admittedly, it was easier to do that then.
Yes.
Because like,
if you think about it, we help sick people across the world with laughter.
Yeah, plus a quarter was like worth $1,000 in the 1800s.
Oh boy.
What? Laughter is the best medicine, and that's what we bring to the people. Boy. In fact,
that's not a literal. I feel like medicine is the best medicine.
That's not a scientific fact. That's just
I think it is. I think that means we're better than doctors.
Laughter's like a close second to doctors, though.
Yeah, the problem is like there's a lot of people who do podcasts about stuff similar to what we do podcasts about who are like, we are better than doctors. So I want to make it clear medical professionals and the advice of doctors.
And if you get COVID, laughter and a dose of ivermectin is all you fucking need.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Listen to Mathis.
Thank you.
Mathis. The views of Mathis do not reflect the views of the Chilluminati podcast.
That's very true.
Or and scientists.
Or any doctor. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I fucked an alien last night. But that's
it's just wild. Let's just glaze right over that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's how you know I'm reliable, because I have the intelligence from creatures far more intelligent than us that pillow talk. They tell me secrets while we're boning.
Do you mean intelligence like information, or do you mean like smartness?
No, they just like the both.
They he put has their the street both. Smarts they, to bang an alien,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
The wisdom.
The wisdom.
the hard knocks.
Yes.
The hard blocks.
John Bell's success as a farmer in North Carolina over time, he would just expand his holdings. And by the early 1800s, he had amassed a fair amount of wealth, primarily through tobacco farming. And he began acquiring more land with increased social standing in the local community, where he just became kind of just well known, essentially rich and within his local community. And as he grew in size and wealth, he began to consider opportunities for even further expansion. And where else but the frontier lands of Tennessee were becoming the most attractive place for him, particularly as they were being opened up for settlement by the U.S. government at the time. In 1804, John made the fateful decision to move his family west to Tennessee, hoping to continue his prosperity on even more fertile lands, which is where all these hauntings end up taking place. The move to Tennessee wasn't unusual for the time, like I said, as many families were looking just like kind of expand, and they were opening up new lands in Tennessee, which meant plenty of opportunity. And the lands in Tennessee were cheap, abundant, and largely undeveloped. The growing population and the promise of fertile soil for farming attracted a ton of settlers, including obviously the Bells. And on their journey to Tennessee, the first weird event, shall we call it, actually occurred. It's been it was suggested and reported that the Bell family experienced a still well known, I don't want to call it paranormal phenomenon, but a phenomenon known as the Brown Mountain Lights. Brown Mountain Lights are basically
this
just...
This is familiar to me. I know about
these. Yes, it's still, like, scientists haven't been able to fully describe it yet. Like,
it's like one of those things you can just walk right up and fucking see it pretty reliably,
it'll happen randomly. Like, yeah, they are basically unexplained glowing orbs that have been seen for centuries now in the Appalachian Mountains in of North Carolina. According to some versions of the Bell Witch legend, the family witnessed these strange lights during their move, which was a possible foreshadowing of the strange occurrences that would later plague their lives in Tennessee. But the Brown Mountain Lights are a real phenomena that there's not like a fuck ton really there to cover.
Yeah, they're not like a hoax. They're not a hoax. They're just, it's pretty likely a scientific.
So this is something that like, this isn't just myths and legends.
Right,
it's like
right. No.
Science, no. Yes. Verifiable. These are things that happen.
Nobody knows what it is, but it's very like tangibly a thing that many people have seen.
You can look them up. Like, it's just like, I'm not saying it's definitely paranormal. In fact, it's probably just something we don't like, electric phenomenon or something, but yeah.
Is this something that people,
yes.
Like,
yeah.
Science has been researching and they're like, we got nothing, dude.
Yeah, you can see this and it is vexing people.
They saw that on their traverse to Tennessee. The sighting would have occurred as they passed through the Blue Ridge Mountains when they were crossing through. But whatever the case, nothing else happened on that trip. It was just the Brown Mountain Lights, and they got to Tennessee safely afterwards. In fact, they arrived in 1804, where they purchased a 320-acre farm in Red River, Tennessee, now known as Adams, Tennessee. And the area at the time was just mostly wilderness with few established settlements, but the Bells were determined to make it their new home. So they built a large house and began farming the land, primarily growing corn and tobacco. They just like, here, this is it. We're taming the fucking land.
A bunch of corn and like smoking a bunch of cigars.
Yeah, no, man. Sounds, I had that. I accidentally gnarly. Smoked that fucking blunt that one time. And the next morning I had the biggest headache in the world because I didn't realize blunt meant tobacco. And so I bought that like fucking expensive.
Did you get got by rap music? Are you like, I heard him talk about blunts and I just assumed.
I thought joints and blunts were the same thing.
Yeah, I'm often surprised. I'm often surprised that I'll offer someone a blunt and they'll be like, is there tobacco in this? And I'm like, it's brown, motherfucker. Like, what?
Yeah, like there should have been like a giveaway for me, but yeah. No, I just thought it was just.
I mean, there
weird.
Was a time period where dudes would combine weed with like a cigar.
That's a blunt.
Yeah. And they still and they still do that out in the UK. Apparently, it's like the norm out there is to mix their weed
they'll
with tobacco,
do it. They'll
which
do like
is
a
weird.
Spliff. They're like spliff it up. But like you used to go buy these ones from the gas station and like cut them and put weed in
Swisher
them.
Swisher sweets, dude.
Oh, yeah. The grape one. Yeah.
Woo. Back to 1802. The Bell Farm, where they settled, ended up being like one of the largest farms in the area. It had humongous fields for growing all the crops. They had pastures for livestock. The house itself was substantially large. It was a two-story log cabin designed to accommodate John and Lucy's large family. Because, again, it's the time where you have kids because you need workers.
Everybody's snarfing popcorn.
Yeah.
Going through two packs a day.
They even have, to give you an idea of like how well off they were and how big this place was, they had, and this is not like super common for just like the regular farmer back then, they had their own separate outbuildings for storage, tools, livestock that dotted the entire property. Like they just had a very big place over as they built on it. For the first few years in Tennessee, the Bell family enjoyed just peace and prosperity. The land was productive and their status in the community grew. John Bell was well respected, not only for his farming acumen, but also for his leadership and involvement in church affairs. He was a very holy church going man, never missed mass, was always there, and was very much a leader in that community. In life in Tennessee seemed to be everything the family had hoped for as they arrived. But their peace would not last forever, as out in Red River, Tennessee, they would acquire a brand new neighbor by the name of Kate Batts, a.k.a. Old Kate. And she was like 40 years old, just to give you an idea. She wasn't super old, but back then, that was old
Kate. She moved in next door?
Yeah, she had like property so like next to his, basically.
So we're talking about like 1.3 miles away?
Yeah, yeah. You're talking, you know, farming neighbor with their own lands and whatnot. Kate Batts, or a.k.a. Old Kate, was a neighbor.
A.k.a. Batts Maru.
Batts Maru, yeah. She was the neighbor, basically, like you said, a mile and a half or hour long away from the Bell family out in Red River, Tennessee. And she was known in the community for a few things as time went on. She was first and foremost known for her very eccentric personality. Many viewed her as being a bit, quote unquote, off. And while she wasn't wealthy, Kate Batts owned some land, and her family, although less prosperous than the Bells, had a small farm of their own.
So I'm assuming she's not married, correct?
She is married. We'll get to that. Yeah.
But to the bat.
I'll mention it, but her husband is crippled at this point. She's running everything because her husband's legs are unusable because
of all right, I'm starting to piece together the whole, like, she's a weird lady, that one. She does things and handles money.
She has ideas of her own.
Yeah.
Wears pants with two legs.
And to give information.
She keeps talking about the vote. I'll have none of it.
To maybe even add a little bit more context to what you're clearly getting at as well, is like the very first things that were written about Kate were 30 years after the events had taken place, still by the eyewitnesses. But there was about 3 decades in between. And then the first book that was really popular was like 70 or 80 years afterwards. So, you know, these are all coming from firsthand accounts. She was real. We have like written documents about some of the things that happened and whatnot. But, you know, take it with at the time and or the male dominated society, because she was often described as loud, assertive, somewhat unconventional. I know. And this all made her a subject of gossip in the community.
I bet she's a lesbian. She's a witch.
Many accounts of Kate Batts as an eccentric woman who didn't conform to traditional norms at the time because she was running the fucking farm on her own.
The Bell Witch better not just be like a confident businesswoman.
incoming sad Alex.
Not quite. So she was known for speaking her mind, even in situations where other women may have remained silent. She was assertive, led to her being kind of viewed as abrasive and difficult by some members of the community, again, because of the time.
What gender were those members of the community?
I think they were male. Weird, right? You wouldn't expect that. One common phrase used in these recollections was that she was considered, quote unquote, strange or quote unquote, odd. A common way to describe people who basically just didn't fit into the societal molds of that time period.
Her ye old lolcow page was huge.
And because she was head of the farm, Kate was said to be physically stronger and more involved in manual labor than was typical for women at the time. This added to her reputation as being unusual or
if you tell me she's the fucking Bell Witch, I'm going to go smack somebody in the face.
Just hang out for the story.
I'm going to go spank someone's butt.
We're going. We're going to get there because the Bell Witch is actually one of the few stories where there's an actual death due to poltergeist activity.
I thought you were about to say, well, there's actually for real a witch, dude.
No, but it's death from something bizarre. We'll get there. Again, her being basically strong added to her reputation as unusual and quote unquote unwomanly. Women in the area were particularly in rural areas were just expected to handle the domestic duties at home. But Kate obviously was outside on the farm because her husband was crippled. As he was working out on their land at one point in time, a tree fell and fucking crushed his legs and he was unable to walk ever again. Like
the local doctor, aka the woman next door, could not save him, sadly.
Also the barber and the baker, oddly enough.
And the candlestick maker.
he it wasn't anything like weird. It was just like bad accident at a time where medicine could not do anything other than give him some wheels to roll around on.
They were like, maybe we should just cut them off. Yeah.
Yeah, like, exactly. There was no attempt at fixing them. Like, there was just, well, maybe we could bleed you. Like, that might help. Some leeches.
Get the leeches.
Yeah, exactly. In one recollection about seeing Kate, it was noted that Kate could be seen driving oxen, which was a task reserved for men, and that made her very peculiar indeed. That was
reserved for men?
Yes.
Like in the way that, like, boys hang out and smoke cigars, or just because it was, like, hard? Like, because it was hard.
I know. Exactly that way.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Kate was often described as being larger than most women of the time, both in height and physical presence. This further set her apart.
You're selling me on Kate. I like,
think this is Kate gonna, is kind of fucking
gonna
cool.
Be, like, this is going to be like she was just a good old woman working hard, and she was the witch.
There's aspects of Kate that make her such a cool character. It's more than she's just a hard-working woman, I promise
you.
I need
to stress this to you. If it turns out that Alex is correct and Kate's the witch, but more importantly, she actually was just like the nicest, coolest person, but also... she was a witch, dude. She was killing people. She's like, be so excited. I was like, get him, Kate! Get
she's him, like, Kate! Get him! Wokeness, like, victim. Like, fucking, like, Gamergate, the first Gamergate victim. The Bell Witch.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, her husband's name, by the way, was Fred. She had a couple of sons, Jack and Calvin, who were described at the time as spindly and gawky boys who didn't take to society. Those were Kate's sons. And she also had a daughter, Mary, who was described as both beautiful and bright, who's barely mentioned in the story because it seems like the moment she was able to, she fucking left Kate and like the farm and just fucking gone.
I wonder if that assessment of her plus her leaving is she was kind of societally embarrassed of her mother doing all of that.
It might be.
And it's so everyone was like, she's the normal one because she was like, I got to go get married.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't.
It's very possible. Like, I wouldn't doubt that at all. So, when people refer to her as Old Kate, this is the context simply behind Old Kate. Like, this is what they fucking mean. It was very much a derogatory term toward Kate in particular.
That she was called old?
Yeah, Old Kate was derogatory.
I mean, you look at 30-year-olds in the 1980s, and it's like, whoa, bro.
Yeah.
And, times change.
Well, we talked about it in a recent episode, but you see those, like, 1920s kids on the street seeing a camera for the first time or earlier, and they look like,
Little, baby adults.
They're like little 60-year-olds. It's so weird.
They're like little 5 o'clock shadow, like, balding guys with cigarettes.
And the eyes so sunken into their heads. But again, like you've all been saying, the reason for her cantankerous attitude was because she was the fucking head of a family in a male-dominated society dealing with other families, other businesses, and dealing with men also treating her like lesser than. So she became boisterous, paranoid, and unafraid to get into arguments with anyone, male or female, because she refused to take shit from fucking anybody. And that made her look down upon, which I think makes her fucking badass. And as you can imagine, that went over about as well as you would expect at the time. And over time, rumors began to bubble up that Kate was, in fact, actually a witch. Now, this was about 100 years or so after the Salem witch trials and all that was well done. So she wasn't living in the area where there was any of that stuff. That said, the rumors of her being a witch, at least initially, seemed to be rooted in more than simple distaste for Kate Batts. It seems Kate had some bizarre behaviors that added fuel to that fire that she might actually for real maybe be practicing some sort of witchcraft.
Let's go. Oh, Kate.
I want to give also context. This is like early 1800s. Folk magic was still common even amongst practicing Christians because it was built into fucking everything. I mean, even if we go back and we talked about it a little bit, but the Mormons and Joseph Smith, whatever, he was the one he was also practicing folk magic before he came into the Mormonism world and stuff like that, which we'll talk about in more detail one day. So like folk magic wasn't particularly uncommon. It was what she was doing that made it kind of weird. She was, Kate was also kind of known for using a lot of strange language. She would make a lot of unusual gestures when interacting with people in the community. And these kind of, I would just say, quirky mannerisms added to the perception that she was different and involved in occult practices.
This is my favorite part of religion, occultism, all stuff, where like speaking in tongues, Christian. speaking like gibberish stuff where like, no, that's evil. It's the exact same thing, but one is fine because you did it in a church. Because
like, you're wearing like a nice white suit.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Kate, so some of the behaviors that she did that also made things kind of weird is one of the things Kate did was she was known to lend out goods or money to her neighbors, but she was rumored to be particularly aggressive about collecting debts. This often resulted in her getting into feuds, especially with those who couldn't pay her back on time. And these disputes further damaged her standing in the community, adding to the narrative that she was being like intimidating or a malicious figure. The other thing she apparently liked to do was she was known to have said the unusual habit of asking women in the community for their bronze pins or bodice pins, which were like just slender metal pins that fastened clothing and lace up bodices in the 19th century. And the reason this is weird is because in the context of folklore and superstition, this behavior was seen as odd and suspicious because at the time, asking for such personal items, especially items related to women's clothing and bronze pins, was part of witchcraft or spellcasting. Like that was part of some of the rituals.
Like getting a bauble?
Yeah, since many believed that the witch could use personal items to place a curse on somebody. So she could get something of yours and then use it as a focal point for her curses and curse you if she wanted to. So like her habit of asking for these pins further fueled local gossip about her being a witch. And some accounts say that women were hesitant to give her the pins, fearing that she might use them in a curse or some other form of dark magic. And one girl of the time said she had actual proof that Kate was in fact a witch. According to this particular story, one of Kate's neighbors had slighted Kate in some way. We don't know the details as to how, either by refusing her a favor, or maybe she wasn't failing to repay a loan. And in retaliation, it was said that Kate muttered a curse under her breath. And shortly afterward, the curse made sure that the neighbor, their butter, would not churn properly. And she churned that butter for over 2 hours. And it would not churn properly, and it eventually spoiled.
Dun, 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 dun.
In rural communities, though, the process of making butter was very important. This was a very important task that was often viewed as a sign of bad luck.
Maybe I just don't have my priorities in place.
Yeah. So when this didn't happen, when the butter wouldn't churn, this was seen as a sign of bad luck, or in more superstitious cases, the result of a curse or witchcraft. And the butter spoiling incident was seen as proof of Kate's ability to curse others. So this girl, having decided it must have been Kate, was out to prove it was. And so what she did was she had the way of getting foolproof proof was, that was a weird way of saying that or writing that. She took a fire poker, heated it in the flame until it was white hot. Then she took that fire poker and plunged it into the unchurned butter, where she said it immediately curdled and began to steam. Then after she did that, she left her house and quickly made her way over to Kate's house for some reason that isn't given. And when she entered the house, she saw that Kate's hand now was also burnt, as Kate then made up, quote unquote, an excuse about grabbing the wrong side of her own fire poker earlier that day. And that's why there was a burn, when in fact she got burned because the fire poker in the butter supernaturally then transferred the burn through the curse to the palm of Kate's hand.
So the implication is that the reason the butter wouldn't churn is because Kate's magic hands were it, she like summoned, very much like D&D, like some sort of magical hand that was in the butter, stopping holding the, I'm not going to let you churn this. I'm not going to let you do it.
Little fingers go up there and like start like messing up with it and screwing up all the churning. Cool, and so she just burned it, and there was a burn on Kate's hand. And that was enough.
So people were just fucking crazy at the
time. Nothing came of this accusation, though.
People are just looking for drama at this point. This is just...
What the fuck else are you doing at 18 fucking whenever? Like, what are you doing?
Fucking jacking off? I don't know. Well, going outside?
That's a sin. That's a sin.
Going to the West, manifest destiny, killing people that didn't deserve it? Like, there was a lot of stuff.
There's a lot of cool stuff.
But that's how they got the land they're on right now. They don't want to now leave that land.
Instead, you're like, wait a minute. This poker burn. Wait, you have a burn. Wait, did you transfer your burn with magic, you evil person? I know you've been taking my fucking shirt brass.
All this shit going on, you know, obviously it's hilarious, but Kate isn't completely like a perfectly innocent and good person, all told. Now, again, folk magic, very common at the time, but also very common at the time was slave ownership. And Kate owned slaves, as many of the people did back then.
Whoa, 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 question. Mm-hmm. What year is this?
Early 1800, like 1805, 1800-something. Like, it's right around that, because the haunting starts in 1817. So we're like in early eras of him moving there.
So this story wasn't, it was 1780 is what you're saying.
Yes, we started in that he was born 1750.
For some reason, in my brain, I thought you meant 1850 and then this took place in 1880.
No, no. It was 1780 is when he married Lucy.
I was like,
then he moved here. He moved to Tennessee in 1802. Yeah, we're not. I'm just giving you the main two characters. Yeah.
No, I just for some reason thought we were in the 1800s.
Oh, good. Glad we can clarify. Happy to clarify.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, Kate obviously owned slaves, like many people did back then, which brings us right back to the Bell family and the dispute that would occur that would set all of this shit in motion and the haunting to begin. You see, obviously with her husband, Fred, being disabled and having one less pair of capable hands to work the farm, Kate and her family couldn't maintain the entirety of the property that they owned. It was just too much. So her goodly neighbor, John Bell, proposed that he'd pay her a sum of cash for an unused part of her farmland. And after a bit of bartering back and forth, what ended up being settled on was that she would trade a piece of her land for a cash loan and a slave from John. So he was loaning her money, but giving her a slave instead of it just being here's cash. He's like, okay, here you can get a slave and then I'll loan you money and you have to pay that money back. You look confused, Alex. You good?
No, I'm just letting it wash over me that like the full picture of the 1780s at this time is like all this stuff's going on.
1804 or five at this point, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Like all this stuff's going on and oh yeah, there's slaves still.
Yes.
So I had to let that amend my understanding of this time period a little bit.
Yeah. In that bill of sale with that deal written down, however, John had written no interest rate on the bill. And when it was done, John supposedly, when he came collecting for the loan, put an interest rate that was absurdly fucking high. Like he didn't put an interest rate on the bill. She didn't really notice it, I guess. And like the deal was done. And now
you could just fucking change the document like at your house after the fact at this point.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Also kind of true. Like it's just that time at that time. So she was pissed. He was asking for an absurd amount of money. So in retaliation, Kate Batts publicly shamed John for being a dick. Essentially, she publicly was just blaming him for all this, letting everybody know what he'd done. And this just wasn't like a one night thing or a one week thing. She did this for a long time. And maybe it was just because of the time period, but it reminds me of, remember Ben Franklin in the Poor Man's Almanac and torturing that man even after he fucking died? She went on about this for 5 years.
That's one of those, what do you have to do in the
1800s? That's like, the difference. That's the difference between we have the internet and they don't. That right there, right? That type of grudge for that type of thing. It probably hurt for five. It probably was absolute torture for the guy. It probably worked so goddamn good.
Yeah. And so now we're kind of moving to like 1817 into like that era. This is when this is all going down. And so, yeah, like 5 years of this straight. And this wouldn't be just some feud that resulted in a nothing. No, at the end, after the little over 5 years in 1822, John Bell was excommunicated from his church for usury and coveting his neighbor's land. Like there were real world consequences for all of this.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like the way that you're telling this very much seems like this guy was trying to scam her because he thought that this woman didn't know any better.
For sure.
And then she was like, bitch, and came down on him. And it's, you know, there's a lot. This is like when we were talking about the Wild West and how criminals could do a lot of stuff, but like for some reason, horse thievery was one of the worst.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
You can like murder a person, but like you stole their horse.
It's the great unifier. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And same here. It's the same idea where it's like, you don't cheat your neighbor out of land.
Yeah.
Cause that's like, once we start doing that, the whole society crumbles.
You have to live right fucking next to him too. Like, how fucked up are you?
So this is getting to the point where he's excommunicated. We're kind of jumping to the end. We're going to rewind time. But before I do, I also want to throw in that there was some conjecture as to the real reason the church excommunicated him. Because when they excommunicated him, he was also kind of like shut out from the society. He had to leave. He had to leave the town. And a lot of that because there was all this supposed demon activity happening in his home. And it was just becoming a nuisance for the town. Priests were coming in and trying to deal with it and whatnot. And it, they were so fucking sick of it. There was all, they were just maybe they were just like, you know what? You gotta fucking go. And we're just going to use Kate Batz's reason as their, you know, law abiding quote unquote reason to excommunicate you. But we're getting sick of your shit. You have to go. But we'll get to that because that's the, as jumps to the end as a little preview, but we're not going to get ahead of ourselves too much. We're going to rewind back to 1817. Because there's one incident that the people look back on that as the center point, the incident that truly began the Bell Witch hauntings.
Did you shoot a bunch of snakes out of her eyes at somebody or something?
No.
Truly crazy.
As we talk about this, I need you to put yourselves very briefly in the mindset of a weekly 1817 churchgoer in a small town during the 1800s. You're in church every week. You never miss mass on Sunday. And most people there are going
there. Slaves are legal.
Slaves are legal. The most people there are not missing a single service in the community. And Kate was also one of those people who went to church every single Sunday and didn't miss mass. However, Kate was locally notorious for showing up to the mass about halfway through the service, being the loudest singer, providing the loudest amens, and generally making a show of it every single time.
You mean my grandmother? You mean my rest her soul grandmother who every time I would go to church with her, she would sing the loudest. We'd be late every time. And she, oh yeah. And she would like, not just loudest, but also like
obnoxious
falsetto, like just.
That's exactly
like that lady
how I picture
on the bus.
Dude, from yes, now on, yes. Kate, think of Kate as your grandmother because I think she might fit the bill.
Hell yeah.
Rather well.
Hell yeah.
She was, this is just who she was. This is why people were, another reason she was like, annoying to people in the town is because she was just this huge personality.
It's a bombastic human being.
Very bombastic. And she was also known for trying to appear smarter than she was. Commonly, she would use big words in a sentence completely incorrectly. And even
like Edward Norton in Glass Onion.
And even made up words entirely that just kind of sounded fancy that maybe had like a real
Did
word.
People know that she was doing this or oh, like, yes. Could they call her out on it? Or
I don't know. I think so, but like, I don't have any accounts of her calling her out. It's just very common.
They base a giant talking rooster off of her in the 1940s.
Back to the event. This incident that started it all occurred one Sunday during a sermon by the reverend of the local town. And it was a kind of what you would call, I don't know, like the kind of sermon that's all about guilt. It was all about hell and how if you sinners are going to go to hell. It was all very kind of doom and gloom, I think is the word I'm looking for here. And one of those angry speeches. And during this intense speech of the dangers of sinning, the horrors of Satan and hell itself, one member of the church, a man by the name of Joe Edwards, felt the Lord fill his insides and decided that right then and there, mid sermon, it was time that he had to repent. And he stood up, walked over to the altar, collapsed to his knees, and kind of surprised the church took a moment, but they all got up and they circled around him. They began placing their hands on him, praying. And as he did, he fell to the ground and Joe began just shouting his sins into the air to repent in front of God and the reverend. You know, you're talking about like everybody preaching and like talking in tongues normal. Like this is the town's like, all right, yeah, we're going with this.
This seems totally weird. Fine. Yeah.
And in the middle of him doing all of this, shouting his sins to the world, the congregation of the church around him, the doors would fly open and midway through, who else but Kate Batz enters the church for the Sunday service. Sees the church circle and all the churchgoers with zero actual clue what the fuck was going on, but without missing a beat, walked over, pushed herself through the linked arms of the circle, threw her skirt up over her shoulder, and plopped her ass down on Joe's chest, straddling him with her 200-pound weight is apparently how much she weighed, which immediately silenced Joe in the process. Immediately, it's like it sat on. He's shouting his sins, just like, oh, now she's sitting on him.
For what purpose?
Wait, we're not done yet. Not yet, not done yet. The circle went silent, and after a bit of Kate, she just started shouting at him. Just like, like nonsense. No words, just like yelling at him. Joe stopped shouting his own sins and then began praying for something else entirely, saying, quote, Lord, save me. Sweet Jesus, lift Satan off of me, or I shall sink into the eternal torment of hell.
Basically, so he was like, she's Satan. Get this bitch
off. Get her off me. She didn't get off. Then the reverend walked over and asked her to get off, to which she replied, one of the congregation people, which was a professor. And she said to him, no, thank you, Professor Powell. This altitude is so consoling to my disposition that I feel amply corrugated. I don't know what that means. I don't know what she meant, but apparently that's what she said. Then when somebody suggested that she was crowding the mourner, which means the mourner being somebody who's in distress, going through something intense, you're on top of him. Get off of him. She then replied, here, Jesse, why don't you take this quote?
I'm just trying to figure out what the
corrugated. She said she's corrugated.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what, like,
I don't know
what she corrugated made it up. Means, but I don't know what amply. I don't know. Amply has to be like a term from the time.
I am folded in a way that I am happy with is what I am amply corrugated.
Yeah, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So they said then it's like, hey, you're crowding the mourner, aka you're like on top of him. Get off, Jesse. This is how she replied to that.
Oh God, bless this woman. Oh, that don't disperse my perspicuity?
Yeah, perspicuity.
Perspicuity? I'm a very plain woman, and I do love to homogate.
Yep.
Near the altar while the with the Lord while making configuration among their sinners.
Bless so she her was homogating. So she was homogating.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck that means. I don't know, man.
Everything she says, I'm Googling. This is great.
Amazing. So, I don't know. She then, you know, the congregation freak out? No. They call her actions an affront to God and the church? No. Everybody actually thought this shit was fucking hilarious. They started just laughing at the whole thing. Hang on, the boys are in mid-read. I can see them both. Hang on, we'll wait. Let them research.
I mean, there's homogulate, which is a word.
Remember, she made up words.
Yeah. I mean, like...
Homologate could be what she meant.
Maybe.
I just love the audacity of her.
Oh, God, that's exactly like it.
Everything about this woman I am obsessed with.
Yeah.
I cannot stress that enough.
She just seems like what people mean when they say that someone is a character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Then they said to her, you got to get off of him. You're actually suffocating him. This is what she said to that. Feel free to take it.
Let him suffocate, preacher. I'm helping him get closer to the Lord.
I love this woman so much. And again, the congregation didn't freak out. They all started laughing. This fucking was hilarious to them. And I'm so glad to fucking hear that when I read that. Some of them, they were laughing so hard they had to step out of the church because they could not stop themselves from laughing. But there was one person in the congregation that didn't find any of this shit funny whatsoever. That person being none other than John Bell. And according to some, this is the back and forth that happened between them.
Is it not enough that you belittle the worship of the Almighty by your constant lateness, woman? Must you make a mockery of a man's awakening to the light?
And before you respond... She responds with an incorrect Bible quote. This is what she said. This is not a Bible quote, but she's... Go ahead.
Well, you... Or she says, well, you take the log from your own eye, sinner, that you shall see clearly to remove the mole from mine.
I don't even know
what that means.
It's so good. This was the last straw for John.
This almost seems like... a Mark Twain character. Like, yeah. This is not a real... I love her.
It's like literally Coen Brothers.
If the people who were giving the eyewitness accounts weren't saying, dude, it was hilarious, then I would maybe not believe that this happened. But the fact that everybody was laughing except for John makes it feel like they're telling the truth.
Do you think she saw the ridiculousness in the moment of this dude?
Maybe.
Like in the middle of, and she was just like,
this is so fucking stupid.
It's gonna be one of them days.
Maybe. She really seems like the person in the town that just loved attention. Like, She would be on this podcast if she was here today.
She feels like everybody gives her the business all the time and alienates her and makes her like a pariah. And so she just doesn't give a fuck and like exists in a world where she is above all this rabble.
Don't give a fuck vibes are fucking immaculate, dude.
It has the same vibe as when you talk to a lot of comedians. They'll always say that the reason like jokes or being funny or the class clown or whatever is to take it like it's the coping mechanism to deal with something. And in this case, I imagine it would be she is a woman who's running a home that's very weird and is called all sorts of things. And she's like a bigger gal who plows the there's so many ways to attack this woman. And she's like, I'd rather they laugh at me.
Yeah.
Then they attack me and like my family. Like yeah, I'll take the just, like it has that vibe.
It definitely does have that vibe.
For me, it's just chronic depression.
Yeah. So this when she said that incorrect Bible quote to him, this was it for John. Like he was pissed at this point in front of the congregation that he called and accused Kate right then and there of being a witch, to which Kate took great offense. But hilariously, instead of pushing back and denying it, fed right into it. And in the middle of the church, supposedly this is how she replied to John, calling her a witch. Jesse, this was her again, there's a made up word in there somewhere. So go ahead. This is what she said in reply to being called a witch by John Bell.
Witch am I? Then let me offer you a witch's malefaction, old John Bell. You may have your broad acres as well as mine purchased at a pittance. You may have your big house and your salubricated health right now, but just wait and see what said changes shall soon descend upon you and more than among the bells.
Laugh. She was like, laugh it up.
Yeah, but you're she's like, which am I? Then you're cursed and other people in your family are cursed. Fuck you. Shit's going to get bad.
But she does say, I mean, what's interesting here is I know this is one of those things like, and then people could accuse her of being a witch, but she literally says, even though it's with words that aren't words, she says, you stole my land.
Yep.
Hell yeah, I'm going to curse you, asshole.
Yeah.
Like, that's what she's saying.
Yeah. Yes, it's exactly what she's saying.
She's like, fuck you, dude.
Yes.
Get the fuck out of here. Fuck off and die and all your family.
But even this witch's curse couldn't stifle the congregation's laughter. They still found this hilarious, so much so that the reverend had to make the decision to just end the gathering then and there. It's over. We're not going to finish the ceremony. And he sent everybody home, and Joe got up off the floor. And when Joe got himself off the floor, he declared himself free of sin.
Sure.
Yeah.
I am now free of sin.
Yeah.
I am going home. Church is done.
She sat on me and it was great. I'm doing pretty good, everyone.
Well, that ruled.
That was, in fact, very awesome.
Yeah. I kind of like a woman sitting on me, actually. I got to go home and think about that.
Guys, that was great. More women should sit on me.
And it's right around this time that the haunting of John Bell's home began. And what's interesting is that the haunting seemed to target not the entirety of the Bell family, but really two people specifically. John himself and his youngest daughter, Betsy, who was 12 years old at the time and was about to go through life's built-in torture known as puberty. And
is there a cat?
Not in part one, really. No.
Okay.
Maybe. Whoa, there's a part two cat?
You might be thinking of something else though that's coming up. I think,
or maybe it's a dog. I can't remember.
Hang in there. You're hanging in there. Yeah.
Ooh, I'm getting spoilers.
You just had like a memory of like something.
Yeah,
uh huh.
Yeah.
And I bring up she's going to puberty because, in case you've forgotten, we've done ghost episodes in the past, but it's been a while. Is like poltergeist and haunting activity tend to pop up and intensify around people, particularly young women who are going through puberty, or young girls. I shouldn't say young women. That feels gross. But unlike many of those, the haunting here didn't actually start with Betsy, the girl who was about to go through puberty, but kind of oddly with John, and not inside the home, but actually on the outside on his property, at least initially. And for example, the very first encounter we know about is in 1817, while he was out inspecting his corn and tobacco fields. John claims that when he looked up, he saw a large black beast sitting at the edge of his field, simply watching him. John claims that it had the body of a dog and the head of a rabbit with bright green eyes that just glared at him. Yeah. Weird, like, amalgamation of animal, dog.
I've never heard of that before, but I kind of like the vibe.
Yeah.
Sounds like a D&D monster.
Say it again. Say it one more time.
A large black beast that was the body of a dog and the head of a rabbit with green glowing eyes.
That's cool. I like that.
Body of a dog and the head of a rabbit is like...
If anything, it could be kind of what you would imagine like Anubis looking like.
Yeah.
Obviously not the head of a rabbit, but like the big ear bit.
Yeah, it's just like a weird cartoon dog, kind of. Like Pluto.
It's weird.
Is what I'm imagining. Like, the head of a rabbit and the head of a dog are like, from a far distance, similar looking, but
just
you would look pretty stupid up close.
Sitting there just eating a giant fucking carrot.
He would look stupid.
With his big ass, little ass mouth.
He's just chewing on the corn and the tobacco. According to John, they stared at each other for a few minutes before John made the most American decision he could have made. He pulled out his flintlock pistol,
shot in the face,
and pointed at it and fired a shot at the beast. And when that old timey smoke from that flintlock pistol cleared, he says the beast was nowhere to be seen. It had
but that's because it was 45 minutes later.
history jokes.
This kind of weirdly gives me like Skinwalker Ranch vibes. Remember the giant wolf that they shot at with their fucking shit? And it just didn't do anything. But and then it went away and it killed its like their cow or whatever it was.
It's so funny that they were like, shoot her! Yeah,
it's just what they do, man. Like
dogs aren't even it's not a big creature.
Well, no, it was a giant version. That's why it was like a weird, spooky animal. But the creature sightings didn't stop there, as John and his son Drury saw apparently a giant flying bird that was double the size or twice the size of a turkey take off and fly away before either one of them could even get a shot off.
That was
I just realized this is not related to. Is that where the Muffin Man lives? On Drury Lane, is that?
Oh, shit.
He does.
Oh, shit, guys. You're right.
The Muffin Man. We're back.
The Muffin Man. The Muffin Man?
Yeah.
Not the gumdrop buttons.
The sightings outside continued. Another one was what they considered, or what they called, an invisible creature in the trees. As John and his son...
So they just saw nothing?
So John and his sons were walking through their property one night when they heard what they said sounded like branches breaking from something heavy walking through and what seemed to be something moving through the trees. But when they went to go look to see what it was, they saw nothing. All it was to them, they said, was an invisible presence that heightened their fear and that something unnatural was happening around the farm.
Well, of course.
So they were just getting very spooked. Then there was the little girl that was suddenly seen on their property more than once. Around that time, we're entering the late 1817 now. John Bell's daughter, Betsy Bell, began seeing a young girl wandering through the Bell property not like in a regular pattern, but at night every so often. And particularly, she would see the young girl in their orchard. Initially, they chalked it up to neighbors, that it must be new neighbors. But when they brought it up to John at the dinner table, all John did was apparently stop eating. He sat there in complete silence for a few minutes before quietly just getting up and going to bed. Clearly, they said, freaked out.
Man was like, I don't have time for this. I got crops. The man was like me with aliens. Like, I got bills to pay. I don't have time for this.
And it's not long after this sighting that Betsy had that while John and his daughters were walking the property one night, they caught something out of the corner of their eye that looked green in the distance that was like somewhere halfway up a tree. And as they got closer, they saw what the green was. It was, in fact, a green dress on the corpse of a young woman who was hanging from the tree. The kid said that while she clearly looked dead, she still had tears streaming from her eyes. The kid said in that moment, they felt terrified, like their energy was being drained from their body. And as they tried to run away, they couldn't for a little bit until eventually they said they were able to break free from this entrancement and run away. And when they looked back, the body was gone. When the girls got back home and told the head slave what they saw, the head slave apparently told them to be careful because green is the color of the devil's hag.
Is that why you chose it for Chilluminati?
Yeah. 6.5 years later, Now you know why.
Now you got, everyone knows green, the color of the
add it to the wiki.
With the devil's hag.
Add it to the wiki. The devil's hag. Devil's hag green is the official color of the Chilluminati podcast. It's a new. It's one of the finalists for the Crayola Crayon of the Year. Devil's hag green.
Devil's hag green. Yeah, God, we'll get there.
Halfway between booger and highlighter.
These haunting events only remained outside for so long before eventually weird things began happening in and around the Bell homestead, starting with what else but classic poltergeist activity like knocks and bangs on the walls and doors.
And again, all this is post I'm going to haunt you, or yes, I'm going to get you with my witch powers.
Yep, this is all after that. So these sounds would happen at night, mostly between the hours of 10 p.m. and midnight. And what would happen is what you would expect: knocking on the door, banging on the walls. And as they would run outside to see who was doing it, there would be nobody there. Now, John believed that this was just Kate Batts sending over her slaves to knock on the doors and basically ding dong ditch their neighbors to trick them. But they could never, he would try and sneak out there at night to confront them, but he would consistently be met with nothing. Those bangs and knocks. And I imagine that, like, I don't know, man. Listen, is that something that you would do? Like, send your slaves over to, like, prank your neighbors?
Honestly, look, his own slaves probably were like, this guy's out of his mind. Let's get him.
Yeah.
It's bumming me out to even, like, the idea that you're like, send the slaves.
Yeah, just let them prank our neighbors.
Yeah.
So stupid and, like, demeaning and racist as fuck. Yeah. But before long, these bangings on the doors and the outside walls began to make their way inside as the kids began to wake up from hearing what they described as rats gnawing at the end of their bedpost and distant dragging chains in the other room. And when they would go looking for the sources, like to get out of bed, the sound didn't just disappear. It actually was said to move to a different room altogether.
Do you think ghosts like come from like, there's like a set time period from when we see ghosts from connected to our time period? Because it really seems like in the 1800s, it seems like a big feature of ghost stories that like are in the 1800s and ghost sightings is like dragging chains. And I feel like over the last 200 years, like ghosts have kind of like grown to look more like people from the 1800s. So like, maybe that's the 1600s with the chains.
Well, it's the idea of like there's different kinds of hauntings, and poltergeist activity doesn't really seem to be attached to an individual dead person, but more of like energies being built up and just kind of being unleashed in uncontrollable ways that are just like bizarreness. That's kind of what we're looking at here. And then there's the hauntings of like, I don't know why chains kind of went out of fashion.
Know why ghosts, what are they like? Is it because they're shackled to this world still? Is that what the vibe?
But if we're looking at this poltergeist activity more being fed by an energy and like the thought, like the thoughts of these people, I imagine one of the things they're like, it may be just feeding off or grabbing common like subconscious ideas of what they're most afraid of. The sounds of rats in their house can be probably the worst living back in that time. Having chains dragging across the floor is probably like when they see a symbolism as being imprisoned in slaves. Like, I wonder if that's part of it. If we're looking at it from the perspective of this poltergeist, whatever it might be, feeding off the energy happening in the home that's being built up from puberty happening, plus the very intense confrontation between himself and Kate, and then him internalizing this curse that he got, and it's just like feeding off that idea.
There were blood stains everywhere. Like, it's a weird, like, I feel like two things are happening. One, the story of chains and like the ghost stories we're getting in the new world, again, this is the early 1800s. Mm-hmm. Like, historically, a lot of these people are moving to places where they're like, wouldn't have been another house with an older white guy living. Like, it would have been a thing.
It's just like British ghosts.
Right. It's British ghost stories. It's stories that traveled with them and they sort of incorporated. But also, another thing I think is super interesting about this is I was watching a documentary about the making of, I guess, like a very Christian movie, like one of those like made by like the God's Not Dead people.
Kirk Cameron type.
It's like a horror movie they created. And in the horror movie that, again, had like one of those like, it's not really a horror movie, it's just like, be a good Christian, you won't
get
killed.
The real horror is having sex before you're married.
Pretty much that's it, yeah.
That's how you live your life.
They kept saying that on set, they would, like, demons would try to get him, and it was like so terrible. Mm. And the documentary was about that. But like the big takeaway I got from that was the fact that Before it started, the directors sent the cast and crew a video of other documentaries about how The Omen and Poltergeist and those sets were riddled with like demonic energy. And
they're
like,
because
we're
going
to be challenging demons, expect it. And so everyone expected it to happen. So, yeah. So I'm thinking that because there was the, yeah, if you want to get cursed, I'll curse you. Literally everything that could go wrong, they were like, the curse.
Yeah, plus, absolutely.
Like, plus, going back to what I was saying, like, if chains are in your mind as something that's synonymous with ghosts, mm-hmm. and you hear something somewhere in your house, whatever it may be, you're like, could that perhaps be the chains of a ghost? It's right. Not as crazy as it's sounding to me now in 2024, where ghosts look like the cast of Seinfeld.
Yeah, well, we got for Rotten Popcorn this month. It's my turn to pick a movie, but I got to pick something very Halloween focused. We got to do like a Halloween spooky movie this month.
Halloween 3.
I can't wait. Like, obviously, I'll be long dead, but like, imagine it's 2205.
Yeah,
and the ghost sightings are like literally someone from the 1980s. Like, yeah, yeah. It was so weird. He had an Adidas jacket on.
He had these things where you pump up the shoes with a pump.
It was so he pumped the shoes and he floated away.
He was drinking a Tab Cola.
You think that's how he died?
Yeah, I think it had aspartame in it.
He was mostly microplastic.
Dude, I saw a ghost that was a naked old man, except his balls were plastic.
They shined. So other than the gnawing of like rats on their bedposts and chains, other sounds began being mixed in with this. One of them would be mixed in with the gnawing would include the sounds of gurgling and the struggle of someone who sounded like they were being strangled.
Ugh.
That was also mixed with the sounds of wet smacking lips.
Ew, dude.
You know what? No comment. That is homes.
That is fucked up. That is genuinely fucked up. That's like the worst sounds you can have.
I'm trying to get you in there.
You sound like Korn. You sound like the band Korn right now.
Okay.
I must stress these. Like, I'm sure it was just some dirty sex going on, and people like were like, "Whoa, ghost, dude." Yeah. Come on now.
Those $20 tier patrons are getting a show. I'm telling you right now, they're really happy they got video of this.
That was full nude, bros. Patreon.com/superbeardbook.
You can't make that promise. We're gonna have to do that in the future.
Patreon.com/podbynight.
Things continued to intensify. Mind you, the banging and on the doors and all that stuff didn't stop. And it would just get louder. They would describe it as like loud rocks that were being dropped onto their roof is what it sounded like. Yeah, like no large rocks that were being dropped onto their roof, making loud sounds. And then they also said sudden storms and dark clouds would appear out of nowhere, despite the family saying that there were no signs of a storm coming. It would just be there. And this all this mixed with obviously the chains and all that had a new noise eventually mixed into it too, which was the snarling and growling of what else but dogs lurking in the corners of the homes. But it wouldn't just be growling and snarling. Eventually, the sounds of ghost hounds fighting each other viciously was also happening around the house.
Did they not have actual hounds on the property?
I don't think they did. Or if they did, they only had one, but it's not really anywhere in the shit I read. Yeah. So yeah, they just like ghost dogs just started fighting in the house. And then that wouldn't be the only ghost animal noise. The last one wouldn't be just ghost dogs, but they also heard ghostly ducks. That they heard quacking.
I'm sorry, what?
They also heard ghostly ducks that they heard quacking and flapping like throughout the home. Spooky. I'm trying to get, you know, really scary.
Ghostly they also ducks. Heard.
Ghostly
ducks. They also the heard.
Scary ghostly shit I've ducks. Ever heard.
Ghostly ducks.
The ghostly way you said ducks. It, I was like, hold on. Wait. What? Ghostly ducks, dude?
Ghostly yeah, ghostly ducks. Yes, correct. Yep.
They heard. Ghostly ducks.
This is like this is the equivalent, the horror equivalent of throwing a rubber duck in your video game. Like it's just what you mean, ghostly ducks.
Hey man, that's what they said. That's just like I don't know. The curse had some ghostly duck action in their house. Yeah, wait, flapping, lots of angry flapping.
No, that's angry fapping. That's different.
Oh, right. Sorry. Shit. Fuck.
That's totally different, dude. Different,
that's
different.
That's ghostly fucks.
You got that going with the moans of someone suffocating in the background?
That's ghostly sucks.
Oh, do you think it was ghostly fucks, but it got auto-corrected?
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, that, yeah. It is in his outline. Yeah.
He's like, gosh, you'll never believe it. There are ghostly ducks here.
All of this was happening in the same year, 1817.
I'm so ducking tired of these ducks, dude.
Duck, they're so ducking scary, bro.
This all happened in 1817 as chaotic
half
and
duck have duck sandwich.
The poltergeist activity, though, only continued to intensify even after the ghostly ducks. And no longer satiated with just creating simple sounds and like large bangs on the house itself, the poltergeist finally moved into the realm of physical interaction with the family itself, starting with the classic tearing of the sheets off of the bed of young Betsy. It would just pull the sheets off middle of the night, just slip them off. And then the hauntings also went from being between mostly 10 p.m. and midnight to 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. After this, for whatever reason, I don't know. So they were just now starting to pull the sheets off of the bed. And this quickly escalated into violent attacks that focused on Betsy Bell. First, Betsy experienced what she said was her hair being pulled. It would get yanked in the middle of the night as the sheets would get ripped off. And as she screamed and somebody, her family would run in, the father would see nothing and it would suddenly stop. She goes on to say that as her hair would get pulled, if she attempted to resist, whether it was the hair pulling or the sheets being pulled off, she would get slapped on her face or pinched on her arm or her back by this unseen force until she stopped fighting. And on several occasions, she was reportedly thrown out of her bed and slapped so hard that red handprints would appear on her body. These attacks terrified her and increased intensity over time. And the slapping seemed to occur as punishment for the resisting of the pulling and hair pulling and pushing and the sheets. Now, John would run into his kid's room, see his daughter covered in red marks and welts, shouting at God, asking why would he let this happen to his daughter? And on one night in particular, after he went in and tucked Betsy back into bed, just as he turned around to leave, he heard Betsy scream. So he whipped back around and he said he saw Betsy holding her hands up to both of her ears as her hands were covered in blood.
What? Okay, wait, what is that supposed to imply?
Like her ears got boxed, I imagine.
That's like, what I'm saying. Like, what are we supposed to believe happened here?
I don't know. She got hit. Like her ears got hit is what it sounds like. Like he left after like tucking her into bed after whatever happened to her. And he didn't even leave the room. She screamed just as he was about to leave. He whipped around. She was holding her the sides of her ears and she had blood on all in her hands from them. I don't know what that means. I don't know how. I don't know what that does.
But shot blood out of her ears.
Yeah. She just got blood ear powers. And John being the holy man that he was at this point, this was the straw that broke the camel's back. He turned to where else but the church.
I'm still picturing Daniel Day-Lewis from
my boy.
What's the one with the witches? Salem's Lot. No, the Prestige. What's it called?
What?
No,
oh, Jack God. Nicholson as Satan. No.
What's the witch? The witch. Know. The fucking witch play. The
with John Proctor.
Yeah, yeah.
John Proctor.
You literally had it before. Not the Prestige.
That's it.
The Crucible. The Crucible. Same thing.
I have no idea what we're even talking about anymore.
He's talking about the play slash.
You know, the Crucible.
The Crucible.
Yeah, sure.
The
yeah.
real life events made into a play.
Yeah, I'm still picturing Daniel Day-Lewis from The Crucible as John Bell.
If whatever, maybe it's right. I don't know. I've never seen The Crucible, so I couldn't even tell you. I know, surprise.
Not even Tituba?
I know of her historically. We'll talk about that one day. So now we move into early 1818. And he decides, like I said, he's going to reach out to a reverend, but it wasn't going to be his local reverend. Actually, he reached out to a man by the name of Reverend Johnson. And Reverend James Johnson was a Baptist minister and a close friend of the Bell family. He lived in the surrounding community, not the community he was from, but nearby. And he had a good reputation among the local families, including the Bells. So when the strange occurrences of the Bell household escalated, John Bell turned to him for help, hoping that his religious authority and faith might prove some relief from the torment that they were now experiencing on an almost nightly basis. And by the time Reverend Johnson was called upon, the Bell family had been enduring strange noises, the physical assaults, mysterious, and a new thing, a small mysterious illness that started affecting John Bell. He started getting a little sick. It wouldn't go away. The family had kept the events quiet for a time, but as they became more frequent and aggressive, when they reaching out to their old trusted friend, it became a little bit more public that they were going through something weird. I mean, they called a reverend in from a different community to come deal with whatever was happening at the house. As he arrived, Reverend Johnson, he stayed and lived with the Bells during this time. And he agreed to stay the night, the first night at the Bell home, to just observe the event for himself. He wasn't going to get involved, just wanted to see it. And he brought his wife with him, intending for the two of them to witness the haunting and see if they could determine the source or offer maybe some spiritual protection or whatever have you. Shortly after the Johnsons settled in for the night, the mysterious noises immediately began. They heard loud knocking on the walls like the family had, which seemed to move from room to room. These knocks were described as unusually loud and seemingly deliberate, as though something was trying to communicate or make its presence known. The knocking was followed by the sounds of scratching, then the chains being dragged, which Reverend Johnson found deeply unsettling. And during the night, Betsy Bell also experienced one of her usual physical attacks. She was slapped hard across the face by an invisible force, leaving visible marks on her skin. She cried out in pain, and Reverend Johnson and his wife rushed to her room and to her aid. And despite searching the room, they found nobody in the room responsible attack. I just imagine them like lifting the sheets up, looking under the bed, opening a closet, expecting to see like her older brother there. But no, they found nothing. And for them, this was the first direct evidence for the Johnsons that something truly unnatural was occurring. And then, as the night progressed, the Johnsons also reported hearing whispers in the dark. The voices were indistinct at first, they claim, but it sounded as if multiple people were talking just out of earshot. The voices then grew louder, and they could make out taunting remarks directed toward John Bell and the family. Though they weren't always coherent, the whispers had a mocking tone, they said, adding to the eerie atmosphere in the house.
Not coherent?
Yeah, like, I guess, I don't know
John
how
John Bell,
tell.
You fucking smell like a fucking piece of fucking peach pie. Fucking slap you around with my titties, you dead car.
After witnessing even further frightening events, Reverend Johnson decided it was time to take a direct approach by leading the Bell family in prayer. So he gathered the family together and began the prayer for protection and deliverance from whatever force had been tormenting them. And as soon as Reverend Johnson started praying, the voice of the entity began to mock him. They mocked
him. In the room?
Yes, apparently in the room. The spirit apparently mimicked his words, repeated parts of his prayer in a high-pitched, sarcastic tone. And as Reverend Johnson continued, the voice only grew louder, more aggressive, and interrupting him repeatedly, mocking his every fucking effort. It just laughed, even though it brought up, like, when he brought up Jesus's name, and it's just like, yeah, in the name of God. Oh, yeah, in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Yeah. It was like, oh, it's all it was doing, was just fucking mocking the fuck out of
him. This is a crazy question. Did any of these people, was Drury a ventriloquist?
No, they were all farmers, bro. They're all fucking farmers. That's all they do. And it, like, yeah, no, they weren't, there was no ventriloquism happening.
This is just such a crazy, like, this just feels like random. It feels like we're
like, yeah, just to, like, put it out there. Like, Bell, this, he didn't make any money off this because he fucking died from this. The person who dies is John Bell. So, like,
what?
We'll get
is
to that
for next time.
Yes, it is. We're going to get
what
there.
The
we got
fuck?
Yeah, man. This
dies
shit.
To yeah. A ghost.
We'll talk about it next time. That's why it's a two-parter. There's a lot to the story that, you know, when you do some digging, a lot of people have done a lot of research. There's a lot there. This voice was mocking him. And during the prayer, the entity also just started making blasphemous remarks, being like, just to show that the prayer was doing nothing, ridiculing the family's faith and Reverend Johnson's authority. It seemed to take particular pleasure in consistently challenging the minister, at times quoting parts of the scripture itself before Reverend Johnson could finish it. Like, no, it knew the Bible better than him and was just going off on him and laughing at his
efforts. That's a weird take from a demonic creature.
Which is why I'd
like, just be like, I'm so evil, I know all the Bible quotes.
But if this is, again, in, you know, looking at this from like, okay, Bible's this is real in some angel. Way. if this thing is just energy, I mean,
devil's just a fallen angel.
If this thing is just a focus of energy feeding off of others, like, you know, like subconscious, whatever.
He knows him because just, you know him.
Yeah, he's pull. It's whatever it is pulling it from your mind, and you're getting a reaction that you're almost expecting to happen.
It's like a mind
that's what
word.
You're there yeah. for, and that's what you're yeah. expecting is going to happen, and that's what this thing does. It's just like,
is that like the low key like Chilluminati like God theory, like to like the like paranormal lore that there's like some creature that shows us what we want to see. Is that like the most true thing?
In November or December, we're going to talk about it in like three or four. It's going to be a huge series, but I'm not entirely not convinced that we are like some sort of a hologram, and not in like the Star Wars style, but in like what the quantum style.
What? Like we're math.
Like, so like,
we're
like math. To give you like, we are three dimensions and our shadow is a two dimensional hologram projection of ourselves.
That one guy who dreamed that he turned into math was the rightest guy. I guess,
kind of, right? Like, and that we are there, like a three-dimensional hologram of the fourth and fifth, like time-space dimension, and like that's how we perceive things. And it's just a really, yeah, it's gonna be great.
Shout out to math guy, because
that guy had
has
it right,
been
man.
Stuck in our brains for years.
I want to meet that guy. I hope he shows
he's got
up.
Space up here where I constantly think about math guy.
Yeah, he broke down into equations, man. That shit is crazy. I love that. It's amazing. And who knows, maybe he was right the whole time. But yeah, this thing is just mocking them, finishing the scriptures. It's just there to like laugh at them. And this like unnerved Reverend Johnson and reinforced the belief that the entity was not only intelligent, but probably demonic in nature as well. At one point, the spirit's voice became clear and began a direct conversation with Reverend Johnson. The voice asked questions, then made accusations, and continued to both insult the minister and John Bell. And according to some of the accounts, the entity addressed Johnson by name, which unnerved him since it indicated that the spirit knew personal details about him that he hadn't openly shared. During this interaction, the entity first referred to itself as Kate, which led some to believe that the spirit might be that of actual Kate Batts, like projecting herself in like, I don't know, magically like out of body astral projection way, I guess. Like, I don't fucking know.
Did anyone tell the student in advance that like this lady Kate messed with the, like, you know,
I'm sure the whole town fucking saw it. Like,
yeah,
absolutely. Others, however, did believe that this was actually all just a trick and that the spirit was using the name to hide its true identity, that it wasn't actually Kate. And again, if we look at the poltergeist feeding, it's just pulling what you already kind of believe it to be. After witnessing, and this is all like on night one, after witnessing the night filled with weird, terrifying activity, Reverend Johnson and his wife left the Bell home. Johnson was reportedly shaken by what he had experienced as the events went beyond anything he could explain through natural causes. He believed that the Bell family was truly being harassed by a supernatural entity that was both powerful and malevolent. Reverend Johnson later told John Bell that he believed that the family was dealing with something that's just not of this world, though he refused to say he was certain it was a demon. And while Johnson was a devout man, the nature of the attacks and the intelligence of the entity led him to conclude that the haunting was beyond anything his prayers or efforts could even resolve. And he began to suggest that the family needed to continue seeking spiritual help, but he was uncertain about how to stop the entity. And so while Reverend Johnson would come back and we'll revisit his other visit next episode, the Bell family began reaching out to other reverends as well, all in a desperate attempt to have somebody come alleviate the things that were happening to him. All while John Bell got more and more weirdly sick, which we'll talk about in much more detail next week in part two.
This is so crazy.
The final part of the haunting of the Bell. Which.
This feels like, you know those like horror games we've been playing, Jesse, lately that are like, you just find the anomaly. It's just like something.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, you don't know which one it's going to be. It's different for everyone.
Yep.
This is just that. It just feels like at this point, like we had like a very clear storyline going, like a very like clean narrative of like, oh, like this lady, she's like a pariah. They're going to blame everything on her. And now we're just like in the like part where like, there's just more and more weirdness happening at this point.
This is a future Scary Game Squad, but there is an episode of something coming up that we recorded where everything until a certain point was like, it's a mystery we're trying to solve. And then suddenly ghosts, like suddenly demons pulling people into portals. And Alex literally says like, this is not where I thought this was going to go. And that's how this feels. Where it's like, all right, the witch. Nope. It's demons now. Like, okay.
That's why this has to be two parts, man. There's so much history there that is like so many. There's so many books written about this. You can go read so many. Again, if you want to read the ones I've read, The Bell Witch and American Haunting and The Bell Witch and Myth and Memory from Local Legend to International Folktale. Phenomenal.
There's like
reads.
A real cheapo movie of it too. Like a real.
Oh yeah, no. There is a movie about it. There's documentaries about it. You can read. I think it's American Haunting is the one you can get an Audible for, like a audiobook if you prefer to listen. But there. She's a historical figure. This all, like, a lot of this is documented on paperwork and all that shit. And it takes a direction where you're like, this is like, this can't be like what she thought like was going for. And that's where it goes in the Poltergeist Activity. You're like, what the fuck is going on? And then when you hear he dies, you're like, wait, what? He didn't make any money. It ruined his life from the very beginning. Batricide. We'll pick that up. That's it for episode one. I don't want to keep going. We're already an hour and a half in anyway. So episode two, we'll wrap this up next week as our introduction to spooky October month. Where we talk about some really fun shit. Thank you guys so much for listening. Again, save December 20th on your calendar, Chicago. There will be a live show. Tickets are going to go on sale very, very soon. Save the date, plan ahead. And Jesse said these things sell out every time. So just every be time. Ready. Just be ready to grab them when you can. Thank you guys so much. We appreciate you. We love you. We're off to do
so
a mini-sode.
So excited to go to Chicago.
Dude, I've never been. I've never been to Chicago. I'm excited.
Oh, and in the winter, you'll love it, bud.
Bro, I'm from New England. So like winter,
bring a coat.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I can't wait.
It's worse in Chicago.
All yeah. Right. It's probably like it's windy city and all that shit. All right. We're out of here. We got a mini-sode to go do where there's like some weird quantum breakthroughs I can't wait to talk about and some cool shit. So thank you guys so much. We appreciate you. We love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Babar.
The elephant?
Yeah. That's not
that HBO presents Babar. Of course. Okay, HBO Kids presents.
Anyway, me and my wife were sitting outside indulging on our porch one night, enjoying ourselves. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I stepped back inside, and after a few moments, I hear my wife go, "Holy shit, get out of here." So I quickly dash back outside, and she's looking up at the sky in awe. I look up too, and there's a perfect line of dozen lights traveling across the sky.